This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu. It's Tech Thursday today and I'm here with Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. Karam, I'm speaking to you today on the phone and you didn't make it to the studio. There's a reason to it though. You're not late. You didn't want... normally you're late, but this time you are not. You told me that you're not going to come into the studio. Why?
Yes. Well, it just seems like this Thursday is super busy at this noon spot, right? So I have to be at KLCC, because that's the National Innovation Conference, and from 12 o'clock to 1:30, from 11:30 to 1 p.m., there's a session on innovation and research in our universities, and that's a topic that I've covered for a long time, and I just need to be there. And then I asked Goh Tian Yu whether he could cover the show, but he right now is actually with DG. I think DG has invited some journalists and they're going around the city to test their upgraded network.
Nice.
So Goh's on that. And then Edwin's with Amazon Web Services. For the first time, they're having their major web services conference in Kuala Lumpur.
Yep.
And then also then Asuhan is actually on the radio or probably watching TV now because the 11 Malaysia plan is being shared with Malaysians.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there, of course, if there's anything related around the tech space he finds interesting, you're going to immediately, you know, share it via Twitter or Facebook.
So. All right. Okay, so let's move on to very quickly since, you know, you've got a lot of events to cover. Shell-shocked or, you know, timely call to action. Last month, Shell announced that, you know, they will be shifting the IT functions, you know, and the whole department of their, you know, Cyberjaya Business Operations Center to Bangalore in India. Now, this story actually came out last month, Karam. So why are you now only doing a follow-up story?
Okay, you do have to ask all this. Okay, no, you're right. It came out last month. But I think we wanted to try to get at the reasons behind this, yeah? Because if I had written the story last month, it would have just been what everyone else had reported before.
Exactly, yeah.
So now there's something, there's a bigger picture going on here. And what it is this global trend called global business services. It used to be that shared services and outsourcing was under its own umbrella. Now companies are moving towards this GBS. And what this GBS is, and I spoke to Bobby Varanasi, who's the executive director and CEO of MatRizel Consulting. And this is one of the world's top, you know, outsourcing consulting companies. And he says that what's going on is the larger companies in the world, and Shell is among the largest companies, right? They're looking at their various outsourcing and shared services functions. Now, outsourcing is when you give it to a third party. Shared services is when you've got, you know, let's say you're in 17 countries, and all 17 countries, you've got a finance function, you've got a HR function, maybe you've got a logistics function. You pull that into maybe one or two places, and you don't have people in 17 cities, right, or 17 countries doing the same thing. So, and if it's, because it's under the same company, then it's called, you know, it's called shared services, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So companies are looking at that, and they're now asking how can derive higher value from combining all of this in-house. So that means they're going to bring some of the outsourcing portions back too. And at the same time, then, while they're doing this, they will cut out the pieces that are in the lower performance quadrant. Let's say, like I said, you've got the operation in 17 countries, and maybe you've got three locations, you know, which are servicing the 17 countries. And now when you do this global business sourcing concept, your services concept, you said that maybe out of these three locations, two of them are actually underperforming. You know, their margins per employee or their revenue per employee is much lower than the third one.
Wow.
So, hey, why don't we just close them down and shift the jobs to where the performance is much higher for whatever reasons? So that's what companies are looking at doing. Now, it may seem like that's a cost function. It's not. It's a value function because they want to give jobs to the location that's giving them more value.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's what companies are doing. So for Shell now, they found that for some reason the job... So India, Bangalore, the operations there, already the team there is doing higher value work than Malaysia. Okay, Malaysia is doing kind of mid-tier level, but the team in India is doing higher value work. And also some of the work from Malaysia that's done is then ends up going back to Bangalore and where, you know, they do the higher-end value add to that. So they say, if this is going on, let's just move the whole thing there because they're now rationalizing within the whole group, right? Many companies. So IT jobs are going to move, and it's about, so we found out it's about 700 jobs, yeah, quite reliable, this figure, and it takes time to try to get at an accurate figure.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but it's not all bad because it's spread over 5 years. And when we spoke to Yasmin at MDEX, when MDEX gave his report card last week, she did say that, you know, also Malaysia is going to be one of the last countries to be affected by this. But even if we were among the first, I think the point you want to make is that these 700 people are well qualified, right? And there's a shortage of IT talent in Malaysia. I think they're going to be snapped up very fast.
All right.
Now, Shell itself did say, we got a spokesperson to share with us that while IT is going to be outsourced, you know, the center also has got other value, higher value work, which is, you know, human resource, finance, distribution, communications, production, and global commercial and contracting. And they said that they're going to try to bring more jobs here, and even new streams, you know, are going to come in. So they're going to kind of expand their footprint. And Yasmin had latched on to this point, and she said, look, at our briefing, you know, at her briefing last week, she said that the existing companies in the global business services segment have already invested over $1 billion last year into the sector. And that shows that they keep reinvesting. And Shell looks like they're going to keep reinvesting also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the good news also is that, you know, and I think we're the first ones to run this, which is the Schlumberger, which is a French company that's in the oil and gas services sector. They have opened up two new global centers in Malaysia, okay? Which is in, this is going to be supporting procurement and human resource. It's going to cover Asia, Middle East, Europe, and Africa. Now, the numbers, they estimate, MDEC, not Schlumberger, MDEC estimates over 5 years, these two centers are going to be worth an extra estimated $500 million in investment by Schlumberger, and they're going to be creating about 535 new jobs over the next 5 years.
Wow.
So the situation is good. It's mixed, actually, because, so the IT jobs are going out. Now, even Yasmin said that in terms of IT, we seem to be losing our competitiveness because India is strong and getting stronger, and you've got countries like Vietnam coming up. And then also the IT programs in Malaysia graduates come out is not that robust.
Mm.
Now, one good thing that's going to happen is that from next month onwards, June, the government MQA, the Malaysian Quality Assurance or Agency, is saying that if you want to join an IT program, you must have a pass in AdMats, yeah, which then raises the standards very high, right? But the downside is that less people will be eligible to go for IT programs then.
Mm.
So the head of recruitment for a college said that, you know, this is not going to be good for us. He's looking short term because less people will be pre-qualified to enter IT. But long term, those who enter the program, when they come out, they're going to the IT kung fu or bhangra is going to be a lot more robust, right? So there's an upside and downside to trying to raising the bar. But I think this is absolutely the right way to go because IT is becoming so important, right? You need top quality talent, you know, in that sector.
All right, we now need to move on to the next story. Let's talk about why Gotee NU feels that Malaysia's Gopeng Oi will be all smiles this year.
Yes, yeah, so our stealth software billionaire in US dollars, you know, will probably be wearing an even bigger smile at the end of this year.
Okay.
So they just shared their Q3 results ended March 31st. And our Goh Teng Yu, no relation to Dr. Goh, yeah, by the way, unfortunately, said that despite their revenue for software and hardware down by 80%, overall revenue for the quarter was still up, yeah?
Mm.
And you can look at the numbers in the article, yeah, because there's a lot of numbers there because it's the quarterly results. It shows that the company's depth of services is strong. So its business model is also robust. That's why even though you've got an 80% drop in these two areas, software and hardware, you still overall earn more revenue than the last quarter because your other sectors brought it up. And so that's why even analysts said that their business model is very robust. And in a media statement last week, its MD, the Silver Lake Axis Group MD, Raymond Kong, said that merger and acquisitions among banks, right, will continue to bolster demand for its software services. And as you know, I should have said this from the beginning. Now, Silver Lake provides solutions and services to the banking, insurance, payment, retail, and logistics industry. They're very deep, especially in banking, yeah? So very, very core, deep domain knowledge there.
Mm.
So Raymond Kong says that, you know, M&A activity among banks is going to drive the demand. And then this was a sales pitch from him, yeah. He also said that it's important for regional banks to entrench their foothold. And by doing, they need to do this by competing effectively in the digital ecosystem because all of us are going digital, right?
Yep.
And so he says that they need to constantly invest in digital and mobile banking. So that was a sneaky sales pitch by the MD, lah. But it shows that the company is continually hungry, right, looking for more revenue. Now, their share price over this year so far has gone up 5%. over the last 1 year has gone up by 60%.
Wow.
And by the way, Go owns 66%. That's a huge amount for a founder to own in the company. And his market capitalization as of yesterday was just a hair under US $3
billion.
Woo! Go owns 66% of that. Awesome, right? And by the way, he's obviously one of the Digirati, DNS Digirati 50.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So one more exciting thing, just quickly add, you can read the article, is that they've got a 27% stake in a company called Global Infotech. And this is going to be listed in the Shenzhen Stock Exchange pretty soon.
All right.
So I think Go can probably add a few more zeros to his net worth too.
We'll be right back in just a moment. I'm speaking to Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9. This is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu and it's Tech Thursdays. And this is the second part of the interview. Well, not really interview, Karam. Actually, more chit-chat with you. And you are doing the chit and I'm doing the chatting or the other way around. So... early on, you spoke about, you know, the Shell IT's for business development moving away to Bangalore, why they're doing that. And then also, you know, Gopeng Ooi, you know, from Silver Lake Axis and, you know, why he will be most miles this year. Now, moving along, this is interesting. The former head of Singapore's Media Development Authority is now an entrepreneur with his own venture accelerated company called The Co-Foundry.
Yeah.
And he's about to launch a fintech program as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so that space is getting a bit crowded and very fast as well, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Michael Yap, so he talks about Bespoke.
Yeah.
It's sort of like an approach to startups and hoping to produce some kick-ass ones. So what's the story in all of this here?
So I think what's interesting is that Michael was... so before he was tapped by the government, he was already running some large companies in the leadership roles. And then he became an entrepreneur in year 2000, mm-hmm. and he launched his financial startup from Malaysia. You know, he was based in, I think, somewhere in Jalan Ampang or whatever.
Oh.
And he grew it into they were doing credit card transactions for the banks.
Wow.
So he mentioned banks like MBank, Public Bank, you know, and some of the larger banks in Malaysia. The customer said, not just Malaysia, they were in 30 countries, Jeff. Imagine that.
Wow.
Yeah, and so it's called Comex Genesis. Maybe some of your older listeners may know this, Comex Genesis. So, but you know, so in 2005, then he sold it to a listed company.
Mm.
And then he joined Oracle in Singapore, heading its Singapore operations. And he also had an APAC role for them. And a year later, then, you know, the Singapore government, his country came calling, and he found himself becoming a technocrat as the deputy CEO of Media Development Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left that role in 2013. And by the way, he was the guy who set up Singapore's now famous Block 71 hub, you know. Very interesting. So that's the epicenter of their startup ecosystem there now, right? So he says that when he left MediaCorp then, when he left the Media Development Authority, he obviously then wanted to get back into the technology space as an entrepreneur. And because so many things were going on in the startup space, he decided to set up an accelerator. But he didn't really believe in an accelerator model where everybody goes in at the same time, Jeff,
mm-hmm.
and then you go through a 90-day or a 120-day program. It's 3 months or 4 months, right? And he says that every startup is unique and it's got its own needs. That's why he calls it bespoke. It's customized, right?
Mm.
So with his program, which has been running called the Co-Foundry for 2 years, you can go in at whatever time you want. If they accept you, they start you with, they call it a 3x3. So they've got 3 modules in their venture accelerator. One is for team building, one is product building, and then one is market building, yeah? So then and sometimes you don't need to go in at the first level. You may jump in straight into level 3 for team building because you've got a robust team and you start there. You don't have to always start at step 1 of within those 3 modules. So he customizes it so that you go in at a suitable level and then you move from one module to another. And each module, they think ideally is about 100 days, you know, not 90 days for the whole program. So by the time you go through, you would have been there almost a year. And so this is the ideal time frame is about 100 days. Some companies take longer, some shorter, but again, because it's customized to your needs. And the other thing is they do invest in you a smaller amounts, but the idea is that when you finish the program at the end of the year, at the end of the program, right, whether it's a 1 year or 18 months, he says some companies take up to 18 months, and that's okay. Because if your needs are that you need to move a bit slower, that's fine. You get your 18 months, then you ideally want to get raised a round of at least Singapore 1 million. And above from institutional investors. So that's the path they're taking. And now what they're doing is they're calling for an intake for fintech startups. They want to have a program within this the co-foundry for financial startups, because there's obviously a lot going on. And by the way, Michael was from that space, right? He was an entrepreneur in the financial tech space. So he's got the credibility to do that. So he's now, I met him in KL on Sunday night, because he's in town Monday, Tuesday, just meeting with people and trying to form partnerships and getting the word out that he's looking for people, you know, to apply for the accelerator. And then you join it in Singapore. But his partner for this is Plug and Play from the U.S. So it's the first time that you've got a program where you've got a partner from the U.S. and a partner from Asia. And then the startups who go in, Jeff, they can decide that actually we need to spend some time in the U.S. You can then go and base yourself in the U.S. with this program and build up whether your team building or your market fit or your product development there, and then come back to Singapore. And by the way, they've also got operations in the Philippines and China, and you can also base yourself there if you want to.
Wow.
But the first thing is to get into the program. I think it's a very interesting program, and it could attract a lot of companies to go in there.
All right. Okay, let's try to wrap things up. We're sort of running out of time again, Karam. So finally, so let's talk about the Thai property startup. Are you planning to buy a property in Thailand? Is that why we're talking about this, Karam?
No. I think once in a while you do want to cover. So obviously we're in Singapore, which is why we do talk about companies in Singapore. But this Thailand, I think this company just reached out to us, and because I think 2 weeks ago we wrote about Thailand too,
mm-hmm.
and then I think these guys must have been aware, or they probably read DNA because they want to know what goes on in Malaysia, right?
Yeah.
And what goes on in Singapore too. So we like to think that we give people really interesting, a selection of news that happens there. So these guys are, they're actually based out of Phuket, so I'm wondering, Can anyone really get some meaningful work done, when you're based out of a nice place like Phuket?
Why not?
So they're based in Phuket now. Already Thailand, they've got a lot of property portals, even more than Malaysia. But yet this newcomer called Fazwaz, F-A-Z-W-A-Z, thinks that it's got a unique value proposition because it's data-driven portal. And for now, it's specializing in the condo market in Phuket, like I said. But they think that they can easily scale it to Thailand, to other countries, other cities in Thailand. So we're starting with condos. He says that they can obviously offer villas, soon coming up, and a whole bunch of stuff. So, and it's run by the co-founder and CEO is a guy called Michael Kenner. So it's a couple of expats, or who maybe made Thailand their second home. It's obviously a popular destination for second home. So they set it up there, and they say that, we've got a team of experts, and every startup says this, right? But what they say is they want to aim to create a transparent and free marketplace, because they feel right now a lot of the information is not so accessible in Thailand. So they're going to allow developers to list homes for free, and they're going to edit this information and then, give construction updates and special offers and all kinds of... The business model is there, It's quite interesting. So you can go and read about them. And these guys were also behind another property portal in Phuket, livephuket.com. So now they've moved beyond Phuket into doing Thailand. So at the moment, they're bootstrapped like all entrepreneurs. And they say they are looking for funding. So maybe them, reaching out to DNA is a way to get some of the investors who read this, to give them a call too.
Yeah, all right. So speaking about reading and all, reading lists for this week?
Reading lists. There's quite a lot. I think Keith did an interesting DNA test. So we sometimes, we have started doing reviews of phones. Yeah, and our reviews are called DNA tests. So he took the HTC's, One.
Yeah.
M9,
mm-hmm.
and reviewed it. And it's a very interesting in-depth review. But he also said that the HT has got another product coming up, which is the M9 One, right? Or Plus, was it? So they've got a high-end model, and that's actually coming out in Malaysia.
Oh, okay.
And he thinks that for some, it's not in Singapore, strangely enough. It is in Malaysia. So he said that for Malaysians who maybe want to upgrade, that's definitely a good buy for them. But otherwise you probably just want to stick to it. It's called the HT1 M9 Plus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he says it's way better than the M9 that he reviewed. And he gives the reasons why. So you can read that article and see all the pictures he took.
Right.
Very interesting. And the other one is coincidentally, yesterday on Wednesday, we had two articles about customer service. And everybody's talking about customer service. You've got to innovate or die or suffer the consequences, right? So IDC again came up with a story on with their angle. And Gartner had something there too where they were saying that the innovation edge in the customer experience is getting tougher. So read those two articles if you want to know what's going on in the area of customer service and how you're probably going to have your lunch eaten up by someone if you don't deliver excellent customer service. And finally, just one more quick reading list on Singapore. GFDI revamps its accelerator program. Mm. And now you do not need to be based in Singapore if you want to be part of the program.
Wow.
Very
okay.
Interesting. So they're taking it up another notch. Yeah.
I've been speaking to Karmjit Singh from Digital News Asia. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.